Germany are looking good for the final on Sunday. They might get another one here. It's 3-0. It's a romp for the Germans. The game.
There it is. There goes this way, surely.
Thing to Bradman there's ever been. What a player he is.
About.
Oh, he's hit this one, Miles. Great shot. Oh, it's a biggie. Straight over the top. The little man has hit the big fella for six. He's off his size. And he's smashed him down the ground. What a player. What a wonderful player. I think he's decided now that he's going to finish this off quickly. Have a look at that shot.
So, speaking, we stopped the previous segment at administration and how poorly or how well it is managed, which determines the fate of sport quite often. And we come back to cricket as a topic because BCCI, as you all may know, fun fact for our listeners, is the richest sporting body in the world. Team India has been doing quite decently, I would say. I followed the latest series where India played against Australia, and I thought they played well, and it was quite engaging. Even the one-day series against New Zealand was something which I enjoyed, especially the knock by Cheteshwar Pujara, Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, and the introduction of the new guys in the team. So, fresh blood is something which I always appreciate. Bowling was quite decent, but batting was also phenomenal. And trivia for both of you, do you know who's the batting coach for India guys today? Adi and
Banger. Sanjay Banger.
Yes, that is correct. So, speaking of Sanjay Banger, there was a time in India, especially in the 90s, so I'm going back into nostalgia mode, when the Indian cricket team was, it was an eclectic mix of people in the squad, and the only reason cricket actually held on to its cult status was largely due to a gentleman by the name Sachin Ramesh Tendulkar and his iconic knocks. I still get goosebumps when I see the highlights from Sharjah even today, and I just wanted to take this up because it was a topic which we love talking about, but no one discusses it in detail. So, starting off with Mayuk, what's your memory of the Indian cricket squad, cricket team, or the squad that we had back in the 90s? If you remember about Toronto Titan Cup and all those the matches that we used to play in Dubai, what memory did you have of those squads?
So, apart from the good memories of Sachin batting well and India winning the match. It's very human to hold on to some painful experiences. So a lot of things that I am reminded of are the painful experiences of seeing India lose from a position where we should have definitely won. And a lot of them revolves around, three or four slots in the Indian starting 11, which were filled up by people who had no business playing cricket, right? So in that aspect, this is something that I always feel that Indian cricket has been very lucky, despite the board and some players getting involved in controversies, not only controversies, basically scams. India has always managed to have some or the other player who has done really, really well will be an understatement, but they have brought in players. India have got players that can really match anyone else in not only the current generation, but generations compared. So India has been really lucky.
So, if I was to ask you for some positives first before we move on to the negatives, who would you classify in this all-time greats from the Indian squad? That we saw when we were growing up specifically.
See, so I am in awe of course Sachin Tendulkar, Rahul Dravid, Srinath. I'm talking about the pre 2001, 2003, 2004 era where we were not that great worldwide. We were a good force in India. We used to win matches here, some matches here and there in a multinational tournament, but we were not that great. So, but then, you know, these people like Dravid, Srinath, Kumble, Sachin, they were like genuine players. They were like good human beings. And that was passed on to the generation which took the Indian cricket team one or two steps forward. So when you had a leadership change from Sachin and Azharuddin to Ganguly, he could not have done it alone without the support of these good people, be it Sachin, Dravid, Lakshman, Kumble, Srinath. I mean, they were genuinely nice guys who happened to play sport. So again, that's why I mentioned, you know, India has been really lucky to have great people. So Rahul Dravid has been my favorite batsman growing up. I mean, Sachin was there, but I connected with Rahul Dravid at a more personal level. Of course, I did not meet him. I've never met him, but in my own mind. That's because if you see Sachin's talent, I mean, he was a guy who was meant to play cricket. There was nothing else he should have done in his life, just play cricket. On the other hand, Rahul Dravid is a person who took his talents to multiple steps forward and upward. And he could have been anyone. You know, he could be running a company right now. He could have been a doctor. He could have been a scientist. He could have been a chartered accountant. But then he decided to play cricket and do whatever he had with his own abilities, which I think, mental abilities aside, when he started out at age level, his cricketing ability were not to the standards of, let's say, Sachin Tendulkar or even Lakshman or Kamli. At the international level, Brian Lara, Inzamam Huluk. No, he was a very normal cricketer with huge mental reserves. So I am in awe of how this personality took his talents multiple level upwards. So, across generations, right now, my favorite cricketer, a sports person coming out from India is Rahul Dravid.
If I may add to this, so one very underrated aspect of this is that these were all individually really, really good players, right? For Ganguly to actually have each of them, and each one of them could have been the captain. So it's an underrated aspect as to how all of them could actually work towards and actually have Ganguly, who was much less senior to, say, Kumble or Srinath, and yet perform under him without having many ego clashes.
Yeah.
Is a really, really underrated aspect of cricket in the early 2000s of the Ganguly era. Cricket of the 90s was basically a mix of the sublime and the ridiculous. You had really, really good players like the Srinath. So you had really sublime talent like Tendulkar, Srinath, Kumble, and
let me just put in Nilesh Kulkarni in the mix.
So we had some atrocious talent.
Nilesh Kulkarni, and a shout out to our listeners from Dombivli.
Yeah, so Dombivli has come a long way from Nilesh Kulkarni to Ajinkya Rahane.
Oh, yes.
Over the years.
Yeah, and I love Ajinkya Rahane, just so you know.
Yeah.
I think Ajinkya Rahane and Cheteshwar Pujara are the breed which belongs to the past and not to the current, actually. And some of the talent, that so-called talent, quote-unquote, was like Vikram Rathod, Sujit Somasundar, Abhay Kurvilla. All of these cricketers didn't belong to any field of sport, like let alone cricket. They shouldn't be playing sport of any level. And yet they made it to the national team. It's baffling. Like, was it the selection overlooking their, I don't know. How did they get into the team in the first
place? If you think about it, consistently for a prolonged period of time, if you actually apply our mind and if you evaluate the squad that we had, you had such a huge number of mediocre players that were part of the squad. And despite them, we managed to have some semblance of success on the international stage. I mean, I remember even now when I look at our World Cup performance, the one that we had to play at Eden Gardens and it was abandoned. Appalling performance. And it actually enrages me when I see people like Nayan Mongia all these nameless, faceless people who had, as Mayuk said, they had no business playing there. And to make matters worse, these people were actually corrupt. They indulged in match fixing. Ajay Jadeja was an extremely ordinary player who came up to the national squad purely basis his reputation, and he dropped the ball there and he ended up bloody fixing matches. I mean, the level of dishonesty that these people had, despite that the sport survived. So, I mean, that we are on that topic, I mean, who would you qualify as probably the worst that you have seen of the Indian cricket squad?
I can make India first 11, India second 11, and India third 11 just based on the people who should not have played. But I mean, I need to put it out there that India had a core group in the 90s when we were playing bad. So you had, let's say, early 90s, you had Sidhu, Tendulkar, Sanjay Manjrekar, Azharuddin, Jadeja, Srinath, Kumble. Towards the end, like from 96, 97 onwards, you had Prasad. But the other slots were filled up by people who were stalwarts in domestic cricket, leaving aside Abe Kuruvilla. He was there for all the other reasons. So,
But Abe Kuruvilla actually came into the team much later than he should have.
Yes, so was Srinath. I mean, Srinath's career was delayed because, you know, Kapil Dev would not go. And once
Kapil Dev couldn't get his final wicket.
Yeah. Once he was reverse swept by Jimmy Adams in Eden Gardens, BCCI decided to get rid of him and give Srinath a chance. But then, coming back to people like Vikram Rathod, you know, he was a stalwart in domestic cricket. You know, thousands and thousands of runs, thousands of them every season. They were just not made to play on foreign pitches. Now, these guys who succeeded afterwards, like Lakshman, Dravid, Tendulkar, Ganguly, Sehwag was unique. So these guys had something in them that could, you know, their technique was not fixed. You know, they had the mental capacity and the physical ability to adapt, but others could not just do so. And yes, I mean, I look at it as from a humorist's point of view. But then, you know, what could have they done? No, I mean, they grew up on pitches that made them succeed. And they, you know, they were making a living out of a Ranji Trophy. And then some people were unlucky. So, for example, if you consider the case of, let's say, Amol Muzumdar, great guy, but there was no opening for him. On the other hand, India had a very bad opening situation. So you had to try out people like these that I mentioned.
But for a long time, if I may interrupt, the opening slot was occupied by people who were not openers. Like VVS Lakshman would open for a very long time.
Yeah, so would Sidhu, sometimes Nayan Mongia, and of course we have Manoj Prabhakar. I mean, I don't know what to say about him because Kumble bowled faster than him.
His career was ended by him bowling off spin because Jayasurya was smashing him all over the park in that 96 World Cup.
Yeah. So, and that reminds me of, you know, Ajit Agarkar. I mean, he has to be the luckiest cricketer alive. I mean, just because for some reason he managed to hold on to his place and make multiple comebacks. Because think about it. You had Prasad and Srinath. Who else would you bowl? I mean, Mohanty has got a chance. Kuruvilla has got a chance. You had people like, I don't know, David Johnson or Noel Johnson.
David Johnson and Paras Mambre.
Paras Mambre, yeah. Dodda Ganesh. Do you remember Dodda Ganesh?
Yeah. We had Amay Kureshia as well.
Harvinder Singh. No, so this brings you to the point. So the biggest improvement in Indian cricket has been the fast bowling, right? All of us would agree.
Absolutely.
Like, we had trundlers in the 90s. Like, Harvinder Singh, I think today, Virat Kohli would bowl faster than Harvinder Singh.
Munaf Patel. You guys forgot Munaf Patel. When he was bowling the actual ball, you could you might mistake it for an action replay. That's how slow he used to be.
I think Munaf Patel was actually mismanaged by the Indian management. He started off as a tearaway fast bowler. He would bowl in the 150s. And all of a sudden, you had Greg Chappell and then he was bowling in the 120s.
And what about, but how do you see Prasad? Because I mean, Venkatesh Prasad, aside the Amir Sohail incident, would you actually recognize him for his bowling talent?
I am yet to make a decision of Prasad because, you know, I am waiting for his balls to reach the batsman.
But Prasad was a specialist for Pakistan, if you remember. Like, he played 3 matches in the World Cup against Pakistan and he has done well in all the 2. He has 2 5-wicket hauls and he has a 7-wicket haul in a test match against Pakistan. So, I think that's the only thing he did well, play well against Pakistan.
Absolutely. Patriotism worked in his favor.
In his favor? Or I don't know. The Pakistanis are, they don't think with their brains, right? So, they think Prasad is someone who can be collared very easily and they ended up losing wickets to him.
Yeah. Do you remember this spinner called Ashish Kapoor?
Ashish Kapoor used to bowl with a Timex watch. That is one abiding memory of him. Like, it never goes away from my mind.
Yeah.
He had a black heavy Timex watch which he used to wear.
Yeah, and we had ridiculous people in names of wicket keeper. You know, they were the people who you know, when we were talking about gully cricket, you found that extra person to make a wicket keeper, and people like Vijay Dahiya, MSK Prasad, Ajay Ratra, you know,
they were.
Sabah Karim, unfortunate guy because of his eye.
He lost his eye.
Yeah, but then, so they were not good wicket keepers, neither were they good batsmen, and they just made up the numbers.
No one wanted to be a wicket keeper. It was just a slot that had to be filled, and Nayan Mungia filled it.
Yeah, he was, I think, I don't know why Nayan Mungia played so many matches.
Because
he was a very
if I used to use my conspiracy brain right now, I would insist that Nayan Mungia was in the squad for the sake of diversity. You needed some Gujuba in the team, and they thought, okay, let's pick Nayan Mungia. That's the only reason that I could think of why Nayan Mungia was in the squad.
I mean,
Nayan Mungia's last game was actually an iconic game, the Eden Gardens Test match of 2001. So, Indian cricket turned around there, and that was also Nayan Mungia's last test match.
But thankfully. I mean, speaking of turnarounds, when do you think Indian cricket actually turned around? I would like to think it was during the NatWest trophy where Dada famously swung his shirt at Lords and Mohammad Kaif and Yuvraj Singh did the magical number. Was it during that time or there was some prior to that or later than that?
I would say the follow-on test match, the Eden Gardens test of 2001, we had no chance to beat the Australians. That was a phenomenal Australian side. Like 17 matches in a row they had won and no one gave this team a chance. Following on -274, 4 wickets down, you have an out-of-form Rahul Dravid and VVS Lakshman, bear in mind, was not a star back then. You had to turn around and you had an entire day's test cricket without a wicket being lost. You come back the next day, win that test match and then go on to win that series. Beat the best Australian team in history. I think that is where it turned around. That gave a belief.
Yeah,
post-match fixing that we could
be. I mean, just to dwell a bit more, I think that was a superhuman evening. A normal person could not have played that. And some background info here, I think VVS Lakshman was battling a back spasm and he was having cramps. And the amount of time that he played in the inning, the number of runs him and Rahul Dravid scored, it was superhuman. A normal person could not have played that inning.
In the heat of Calcutta.
In the heat
summer.
Of Calcutta. Yeah, exactly. So, they were battling dehydration as well. But that was a superhuman inning. So, according to Adi, that was the inflection point. I thought it was the NatWest inning. That's when we actually started, asserting ourselves as a cricketing team. Mayuk, what did you think?
So, yes, I mean, though the NatWest one day and the India-Australia test series definitely were the turning point. But, looking back, that era from 2000, so Ganguly became the captain in 2000, going to Zimbabwe, playing against Zimbabwe. But basically, the time from 2001 to 2003, where if not the entire Indian cricket setup, but at least the setup near that revolves around the national cricket team was really, really taken care of well by Ganguly. So Ganguly and Jagmohan Dalmia together. So, no favoritism, giving chance and multiple chances to people like Zaheer Khan, Yuvraj Singh and Virender Sehwag. So he was a good captain, I mean, I have my reservations towards Ganguly as a batsman. And I am saying that at the risk of being disowned by my immediate and extended family. But having said that, his captaincy turned it around. And I do not think that other members of the team would have been as successful a captain as Ganguly. I mean, we all know, Tendulkar failed as a captain just because he was setting expectations that were unrealistic for his players. On the other hand, Ganguly, I think the fact that helped Ganguly was not was that he was not a great batsman. And he could understand the point of view of someone like Virender Sehwag and Zaheer Khan, who was not a great bowler to start with, but then he succeeded unlike anyone else in Indian cricket bowling. So that those 3 years, like 2001 to 2003, ending with the World Cup in South Africa, was a turning point for Indian cricket, I think. Because people in other countries outside the metros, outside the Mumbai and Karnataka cricket setups felt that, yes, we can go and we can make a difference. Aspirations changed for many kids who were playing age-level cricket at that time.
I think that era marked the shift of Indian cricket from the metros to the smaller towns. Then it ended up culminated with Dhoni becoming the captain at the end of 2005-6. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So, I mean, and we should remember that these happened. I do have a tremendous respect for Jagmohan Dalmia because he ran the board like a business, and he had he had that vision, which no one else in Indian cricket administration had. That time they were only considering their own payments and, how much money can they make out of a series, all those things. But this guy had true cricketing values in mind. I mean, yes, he made money. Indian cricket made money. Players made money. But so did the entertainment value go up. So, and I think Jagmohan Dalmia's leadership was really key at that time to bring Indian cricket out of the darkness of match fixing towards a more glorious era. And we are reaping the rewards right now.
So that brings me to the point. Was there always a sense of inevitability to the fact that Indian cricket would eventually end up doing well, given the resources and the talent pool we have always had and the sheer number of participation?
Yes, we had an advantage that no other country had, multiple advantages. As compared to England, cricket was not competing with other sports in India. Number two, Australia, we had the power of numbers behind us. And yes, we did not compete with Australia for a long, long time. But just because, the cricket is so much seeped into our daily lives, at that time, even in the 90s, there was a decent cricket setup. Coaches were good. And now it is just phenomenal. I mean, the ground, Indian cricket grounds, the academies, the facilities are just amazing. I think we are reaping the benefits of good work done by, people in early 2000s, especially, Jagmohan Dalmia and his group. A lot of these people in BCCI are corrupt. I guess almost all of them. What has it going for them is good players coming out and the foundation that Indian cricket has. But I really hope that these guys have a vision. I really hope that these guys think what will happen 10 years from now.
So, but I mean, so, if I could just step in here, I think the other factor that we conveniently forgot to mention is the fact that it took a lot in terms of asserting ourselves as a dominant player as well. I mean, you had the ICC, which used to be bloody arrogant as a cricketing body, whereas the cash cow or the moneymaker for them was the BCCI. I think, Mayuk, you're spot on when it comes to good leadership and having vision, which when it came to Jagmohan Dalmia, because he was the first chief who used to actually assert himself on an international stage, saying that this is how we would like to do go about it, and this is how it would be done. And the ICC ended up capitulating and realizing that we have to not toe the line that BCCI sets, otherwise we are not going to have any money. And we also kind of flexed our muscles when it comes to setting up test matches and series with West Indies, Sri Lanka, because the cricket in those countries was largely due to patronage by the BCCI. Because had it not been for the BCCI setting up so many series with or a lot of playing sessions with Sri Lanka and West Indies, I don't think those countries would have even survived. So asserting ourselves was quite important. Speaking of which, I would like to draw attention to the scenario that we have today in terms of players. Where do you think, in terms of greatness, would you place Dhoni and Kohli in the all-time great list that you spoke about? Because they've been in the squad for a while now. Kohli, to my mind, has performed consistently and has been playing for a while now. Dhoni obviously led us to World Cup, but as a player, do I see him as a great? I don't know. That's my opinion. But how do you see it, Adi?
So one area where Indian cricket, Dhoni, Kohli and Indian cricket in general has improved from the 90s is fitness. I think Kohli has sent the benchmark for fitness even before we start talking about Kohli as a cricketer. I think he's an extremely fit human being, and I think that has set the benchmark and the rest of the side has followed suit. In terms of batting greatness, I have my reservations. I think the quality of bowling currently is not as good as it was in the 90s. You may come up with stats which say otherwise, but we had the era of Akrams and the Ambroses, and currently you do not have three bowlers of merit in world cricket right now. And Kohli is a good batsman, but he's not as great as the numbers make him out to be.
Ayuk?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as far as greatness goes, yes, I have never been a fan of comparing eras, but you know, if I had to do that, I mean, I would put Dhoni right up there, either with Sourav Ganguly or a little bit above him. That's my opinion. That's because, yes, he's not a great batsman. He is a good batsman at best. But he brings a lot more.
You say that even if you look at his test record?
At his batting record in tests?
Yes.
It's mediocre.
Yeah, it is mediocre. I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, that's what I mean. He is a person who, as far as just batting goes, he barely manages to stay in the team as far as a batsman goes. Okay, let me not talk about right now, but let's talk about when he was the captain. In my opinion, he brought things on the table that no other captain would have brought at that time.
Such as?
For a long time, his vice captain was either Sehwag or Gambhir. Hmm. I don't think either of them were as cold and calculating as Dhoni. Because, see, yes, I mean, you have to earn your place in the 11, but then you have this person here who can, you know, influence that 11 to play towards his vision. You know, he led in a different way where he told a person, you do not have to do beyond this. I mean, this is what you have to do, and just do this. And you will understand this better if you look at his way of captaincy for Chennai Super Kings. You know, the roles are, you know, recut out really well for each player. And he will get players who will follow his commands to the T.
But it works against the team in many cases. Like, for instance, he doesn't go for an out-and-out fast bowler. He'll opt for someone like Joginder Sharma or a Mohit Sharma because they are much easier to control as bowling resource.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, see, he could have done things slightly better, of course. I mean, his test captaincy record is pathetic. I mean, I agree with that. But he is responsible for... So right now, if you see the Indian one-day team, they cannot lose. You know, yes, I don't know what will happen in the upcoming World Cup. They might lose in the semifinals just like they did in the previous World Cup. But having said that, India loses just one or two matches here and there. You know, that was first started by Dhoni where he had a framework for success, I think so. And he could see the game 10 years, he could see the game 10 overs back. And that was what I liked about him.
And a lot of the success was inherited because he had Ganguly's era where we were fairly successful. And then the IPL, which came in 2008, right? Which taught these players to play in front of big audiences.
Lots of things worked in his favor. Yes, I mean, a lot of things worked in his favor. The IPL or, emergence of players that can do things that others could not. But then, I mean, yes, I mean, I would not like to take credit away from his captaincy per se. I mean, his captaincy was top notch and he was a very fair person. He gave, just like Ganguly, he gave people chances and a lot of them deserved those chances.
But I mean, if I was to bring in the IPL context here, I think I would differ with you there, Mayukan. I have a hypothesis again, and if you connect the dots, you can probably see it the same way as I do. But that's something that I would like to talk about next, the IPL and the effect that it has had on cricket.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I think IPL in itself deserves a big segment.
So, the previous segment, we were talking about how we saw the Indian cricketing squad back when it was in the 90s. We spoke about the greats and we ended the discussion on Dhoni as an individual because for Kohli, I think we will let some time pass before we pass verdict on him from our eyes. Mayuk's parting comment there before, at the end of the previous segment was that he thought Dhoni was fair, and I have a slightly different viewpoint because while he may have started off as a well-meaning player who wanted to be fair and was indeed a good captain or a leader, I think he let the power go to his head, and towards the end he ended up creating a cartel and did a lot in terms of managing the Indian cricket team from the outside. So we are looking at a cartel which consisted of Dhoni, Ravindra Jadeja, Ashwin, and basically the Chennai Super Kings squad, which was managed by a sporting agency in which Dhoni had a very big control stake, and there was a literal conflict of interest which no one actually addressed. His proximity to N. Srinivasan, who was the BCCI chief for quite a decent duration, where he was actually made a director at India Cements, and those glaring red flags, no one wanted to address it. So was Dhoni fair? All these things actually point to a very strong no. But then the segment that we are about to discuss now, right now, has a lot to do with IPL as the template. So how did you look at IPL starting off, and how did you see it today? So maybe Aditya, you can start us off here.
Yes, sir. To begin with, I didn't think the IPL would last 10 seasons, to be really honest. I didn't feel that cricket has always been a nation versus nation sport, and I didn't see any relevance through club cricket to begin with. And the fact that we are in its 11th or 12th season, is it? Which season? This is season number
11. No clue. I absolutely have no clue.
I think 2008. So we are in the 11th season right now. So it's, I think, here to stay. It's been fairly successful. Cricketing wise, we can, it's out for debate as to what it has added to Indian cricket. But what it definitely has added is that the players are now used to playing in front of big audiences. They are now used to playing in big occasions. The IPL final has become a big occasion among even the non-cricket supporters, right? So I think Indian one-day cricket has benefited a lot because of the IPL. But the quality of cricket in the IPL, whether it can be considered a sport in the first place, is debatable.
Yeah, and going back to what Rahul was saying, the second name for IPL is actually conflict of interest. So in most cases, sportsmanship, or not necessarily sportsmanship, but let's say moral ethics is hit out of the park, you know, like a six. So, I mean, personally, I don't watch IPL.
Micromax 6.
yes, exactly. Or whichever telephone.
DLF Maximum.
Yeah, exactly. I think kids don't know what is a six. They more connect with DLF Maximum right now.
And the six is supposed to be a spectacle. It's not supposed to be a branding exercise.
No. Now drinks breaks are also some kind of advertisements, I guess.
But I think this is something which is borrowed from American sport, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to learn how to make money out of sports, how to run it like a great, great, successful business, American sports is the way to look at. But then, yes, coming back to the IPL, from a personal point of view, I don't watch IPL. I do not follow it. If there is some controversy that arises, which more or less does every season, then I check it out on Twitter and things like that. Usually, I follow the cricket scores of Indian one-day matches on ESPN Cricinfo. I watch some sessions when India plays test cricket outside India, like England, Australia, South Africa, New Zealand. So IPL, I do not know the latest gossip about IPL. So yes, stats is not a concern. Gossip is a concern in IPL, and I don't know that. Going back to my first memories, so as you all know now that I and Aditya come from DY Patil, and DY Patil Stadium was one of the first venues. In fact, it used to be
hosted
one of the
first two finals, actually.
Exactly.
It's the venue of the first two IPL finals.
Yeah. And when IPL was at its nascent stage, when it was a little bit less corrupt than it was right now, students of DY Patil actually could get into the DY Patil Stadium to watch an IPL match as a volunteer. So I went there for a couple of matches.
Mumbai versus Delhi, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that Mumbai versus Delhi or Deccan Chargers was the first match that I watched. I know Sachin and Jaisuriya were opening. It was fun. I was not sure what this is going to become. I did not know what a huge beast this IPL is going to be, but it was fun to watch. I did not like the amount of PR that was going on with IPL at that time, even now. So, I mean, from a purely cricketing standpoint, like, for example, if you ask me about what happened in this over in the 90s, one-day match, I would know that. I would know when Sachin scored a century. I would know when Kumble took five wickets.
Rishikesh Kanetkar hit that four.
I know things from one-day matches and test matches in 90s, early 2000s, over by over. But IPL, I have no idea. You cannot. I think I come across as a non-cricketing fan when I talk about IPL because I frankly do not watch it. But there are a lot of fun things that I take away from IPL is that, you know, these franchises usually they come up with a name, they bring a player out of nowhere, buy them for a lot of money, and after two matches, they are gone. So that is what struck me, that one of the negative sides. On the positive sides, yes, the general argument is that a lot of talents have come out, different styles of play, more confidence, more ability to handle pressure. These things have come out, but then I would leave this to you guys to analyze.
Mayuk, a lot of our assessment of the IPL comes from the fact that we follow cricket for the fact that it is a sport. And I think a lot of the IPL audience demographic doesn't think of it that way. For them, it's an entertainment option. It's an alternative to a 3-hour movie. I think that's how a lot of them look at it. But I was quite surprised last year to see that the IPL actually has a genuine fan following.
It absolutely does. I mean, it has... I mean, it's like a movie releasing every day in March and April.
And it would be really pretentious of us to write it off entirely. I think it has its utility. Like, the CSK and KKR now have genuine legion of followers, and they are diehard fans of CSK now. I think they have gone beyond nationality, and they actually go to the stadia and support somebody of a foreign nationality, which was unthinkable 10 years ago.
Except Kochi Tuskers, Pune Warriors, and unfortunately Delhi Capitals, that is true for most of franchises, I guess.
But again, like, was it like in the 1990s, like, would you have ever believed me had I said that there would be Wankhede chanting for AB de Villiers? Like, I think the IPL has made that possible. And a lot of them really do not understand the sport. If you go to the stadia, I don't think a lot of them understand the nuances of cricket.
So the IPL has been around for 12 years, right? And then now, if a kid is becoming a teenager at 13, he or she has been around the hype of IPL all his or her life. So for them, this is cricket. Even if someone is, let's say, 20-year-old right now, for the last 12 or 13 years, he or she can remember IPL. So for them, this is how cricket is. And you cannot tell them otherwise. Unfortunately, that is the truth.
And it's a viable commercial property because of that.
Exactly. Yeah. I think leagues are not only IPL, Big Bash League. At least these two are here to stay. I do not know about the other leagues. Are a desperate attempt by the respective boards to earn money.
I think Caribbean Premier League is fairly successful. I think it's the biggest tournament in the West Indies right now.
Does Knight Riders have a team there?
Yeah, they have a Trinidad and Tobago side is named Knight Riders for some reason. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, because so like from where it started, you know, you had this Bangalore team with Wasim Jaffer and Rahul Dravid,
you know, and Jack Kallis. Number three.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that Wasim Jaffer was drafted in, and now you have a situation where Pujara is not part of any team. So I mean, these things have changed, you know. And I mean, if you were to ask me, is there anything specific that I like about the IPL or what has intrigued me? I have noticed that, you know, how football teams have their own strategy. Like, mm-hmm. XYZ is a defensive-minded team. Mm-hmm. XYZ is a passing team. XYZ is, let's say, a counter-attack orientation team. Now, the T20 teams have a strategy. You know, they don't just go and play cricket. They play I think a lot of successful franchises play their own brand of cricket. There will be a team which is built around bowlers. There will be a team which is built around big hitters. There will be a team which is built around two big hitters, two good bowlers, and some floaters. And, you know, they stay with that. You know, it's like a psyche in their franchisee, which I did not ever think will happen in cricket. But if you look at IPL teams, you know, teams are built and bought around a particular philosophy, which is a big change in cricket in general.
And this is how the IPL has evolved over the years, as you said. So in the first part of the IPL, teams actually only wanted to stock their side with iconic players. That's all they cared about. And as the tournament evolved, now they are looking into strategies. Like Rajasthan Royal always has a pool of players who you have never heard of, and yet they get the best out of them. Mumbai is this team of star power, basically. So they buy anyone and everyone who is a big hitter. like completely agree with you on that.
I
just want to since you guys are talking about the positives, I just want to highlight one more aspect of this, which is as Adi pointed out, I'm kind of connecting the dots here. As Adi pointed out earlier, the IPL is not meant for the purists. It's meant for the casual observer or someone who's seeking an alternative to 3-hour movie. So would you say that this whole format has kind of degenerated the sport, where it is about bludgeoning the ball out of the stadium with bowlers having very little morale and only the big hitters gaining all the fame? Or do you think this is actually doing something good for the sport, because this also could be used as a platform to give youngsters a break into the national squad? Or, I mean, how do you see this? Because I'm still not sold on how IPL can be used as a talent pool, because how much can you gauge someone's batting prowess or bowling prowess basis a 20-over inning? So
it's actually worked the other way around, actually, Rahul. So what has happened because of the IPL is new skills have started coming up. We have never thought of batting as an art where someone could reverse sweep the ball outside the park for a six. So the IPL has brought in skills like those to the game. Test cricket is now a faster sport because of the IPL. And cricket is a much fitter sport. So it's a sport for the fit people now. If you watch cricket in the 90s, you had a lot of people with paunches. I don't think you would find
Arjun Radhatunga. When you say that, I think that's the first image that pops in my head.
Or Inzi, for Inzi, that matter.
You all are forgetting Ramesh Pawar.
Ramesh Pawar.
He comes from my favorite Ranji team, by the way.
And even Sehwag, for that matter, was not a really fit player. I think the Indian cricket team right now looks like an athletic team. So most of them can run the 20 yards as fast as anyone else in the world. I think the IPL has a lot to do with it.
Speaking from the point of view of a purist, I consider myself to be a cricket purist. I may not... that is something that is only in my mind. I may not actually be a cricket purist. But yeah, so... I mean, this is a thing which, you know, cricket is trying to survive on. I mean, solely playing test cricket would not have gone anywhere. I mean, whether players are coming in or not, whether they are adapting to playing test matches or not, that is secondary compared to what cricket and various cricketing bodies across the world are doing to survive.
Commercial viability, you mean?
I mean, absolutely. So, and my point of view about Rahul's second question, that are we getting players whose talents have been gauged solely on the IPL platform? I mean, the answer is yes and no. Yes, yes is based on their ability to take in pressure, you know, and the confidence that they get with playing while playing with other senior players or foreign players. So when they come out onto the field with the India colors, it's no longer a goosebump kind of situation for them. I think so. So the IPL lets selectors and captains and coaches see player whether they are okay at big situations. You know, can we make something out of this guy? Now,
but I think this is where the selector's discretion comes into play, Mayuk, because the selector has to look at both the statistics you have in Ranji Trophy cricket and the ability to handle pressure, which is what the IPL is reflective of. Like, a Ranji Trophy cricketer in the past would play a Ranji Trophy final in front of 50 people and two dogs. So you couldn't assess, gauge how he handles pressure. I think the IPL is a good reflection of how a player can handle pressure, but probably not talent, right?
I think so, yeah. A lot. So for example, Ravindra Jadeja came into the Indian team setting solely based on his IPL performances. No one took his triple hundreds in Ranji Trophy seriously. Correctly, that is. So, I mean, now he is not a great bowler, nor is he definitely not a great batsman. But he does some things on Indian pitches with his bowling, which is extremely, extremely effective. And I think what helps him do that is his confidence in his abilities. And that was probably something that was seen by either selectors or Shane Warne during his time in Rajasthan Royals. And that could potentially be true for people like Rishabh Pant and Bumrah, those kind of players, you know.
But again, I mean, I would like to pinpoint a specific topic here. IPL as a platform, do you feel, because I look at it this way, that it is disproportionately skewed towards a brilliant bowling performance as opposed to, and working in your favor, as opposed to brilliant batting performance working in your favor? To explain myself a bit more, if you scalp 5 wickets in an IPL match, that will garner far more attention and will make people sit up and take notice, as opposed to 100 or a 90 score of 90 of 50 or 60 balls. Because practically every other batsman is out there trying to do that, whereas brilliant bowling performances are few and far in between. So, how do you see this kind of dilemma?
No, that is true. That is what is happening. I think the trend we see nowadays is, yes, you have performed in the IPL. You have had your 2 matches of fame. You have probably helped your team win 1 or 2 games in the IPL. Now, let's see what you can do in first-class cricket or List A cricket. As an example, the India A setup is right now very strong. With Rahul,
but I think Rahul Dravid has a very good justification for that, right? Rahul Dravid is a very strong reason for that.
And he seems, yes, yes. Seamlessly gets in people from the age group cricket to India and to the national team. I think Rahul Dravid is
done. So most of the players that are coming in right now, they, especially the batsmen, they have they have played really good in India A level, and India A now tours outside. So for people like, you know, Mayank Agarwal, you know, Hanuma Vihari, Prithvi Shaw, Shubman Gill, you know, they have scored heaps of runs in India A level and outside India, and they were initially probably scouted by I'm not sure about Hanuma Vihari, but Gill and Mayank Agarwal, you know, they were initially scouted by IPL people. They did not play a lot, but, you know, being in the circuit, people got exposed to their talent, and then they were given a call either to Ranji Trophy or India A. So I think, I don't know whether it is good or bad, but that is a trend I am seeing right now. That
IPL and T20 cricket, Mayuk, if I may add, is a reasonably okay gauge of a batsman, but definitely not a good enough gauge of a bowler's
value. No, definitely not.
Because a bowler ends up picking a few freebies out there, because just the batsman going out there to hit you out of the park, you tend up picking a few freebies. Like, that's the way Hardik Pandya, for instance, gets all his wickets.
Yeah, that guy is an exception. That guy is an exception. But, it is especially true for bowlers that their handling of pressure situations is gauged. Because you look at Bumrah, Yuzvendra Chahal, Kuldeep Yadav, it does not bother them if they have been hit for a 6. You know, these two guys, I mean, Bumrah aside, Kuldeep Yadav and Chahal, they take wickets everywhere in one-day matches. And, you know, it comes from the IPL mentality. So right now the trend in world cricket is that, you know, wrist spinners are winning you the game in the shorter formats, especially. And India have 2 of them out of nothing. Do you know what Yadav and Chahal have done in Ranji Trophy? Probably not, because they have not
Probably
played
not.
Any. And they went straight from IPL to...
they went straight from the under-19 level to the IPL and then straight to the national team.
So probably their statistics there does not speak for their abilities. But, you know, their mental strength does. And that was what I think brought them here.
And your regular guidelines of how you view cricket has also changed, right? Because we are looking at it from the perspective of a purist. But then your opposition also hasn't played a lot of first-class cricket. You look at the current Australian national team. Many of them have come straight from the Big Bash League to the national side. David Warner, for instance, did not play a single first-class match before he moved into the Australian Test match side. So,
yes. I mean, I agree with that. And that is how cricket is trying to survive. I mean, I do not like IPL. I know none of us here likes IPL. I mean, among the three of us, we are not a fan of IPL.
In fact, I switch off cricket for the 2 months of the IPL, except for probably the final I end up watching as a spectacle, but none of the other matches.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I see what Ambani is doing. You know, is he? Sometimes I feel certain matches are fixed. You know, maybe do you guys feel matches in IPL are fixed?
Majorly. I think when Srini Mama was the BCCI chairman and the owner of CSK, almost every other match used to be a game which used to end as a cliffhanger with the last ball needing a six, and Dhoni or Vijay or someone of some guy would come and smash a six and then they would be done with it.
But that was CSK's last season also, Rahul.
Yeah, but CSK did that every time. So, I mean, was it fixed? Was it rigged? Yes. Mm-hmm. In the name of entertainment, I think they hoodwinked a lot of consumers. But, I mean, as the great Ravi Shastri says, it's cricket which is the winner at the end of the day. Which brings me to my next point, which I've been itching to start off with, that cricket has been made quite memorable by a lot of other factors besides cricket stars themselves. So, Harsha Bugle, I would say, is a very strong reason. But we are now drawing to the end of this whole podcast, and I would like to give a shout out to all commentator fans, because this is for you guys. How do you see commentary playing a role in engaging the audience today? How would you think about the crop of current commentators that we have today? Because I have, unfortunately, I did hear Richie Beno a bit. There was Tony Gregg, who was a brilliant presence in the mic room. Then I think my memory starts getting a bit dodgy, because you had LS, Arun Lal, I think there was Ravi Shastri with his standard template of one-liners, and you know, commentary stopped becoming, and there was Sidhu, which is non-stop nonsense. So how do you see that part, and what could, like, you just take us memorable bit of commentary memory
I would like to tell you what, you know, Kapil Dev said long ago, that, you know, he of course was talking about a math situation, but as far as commentary goes, I think Kapil Dev will say, you know, commentary difficult to nahi hai lekin mushkil zarur hai. You know, so I mean, I sometimes watch cricket just for the commentary. You know, you have LS Chivaramakrishnan, who was once on live television. He was telling how Kumble should hold the ball. Then you have Arun Lal, who talks about wildlife. You know, when there is a match that is going on in India, you have crows sitting on the lights. And he was talking about those bloody crows.
Arun Lal had a tie for each animal he used to talk about.
Yeah, that was their. I don't know. Like, I don't know their brand of selling. So and then you should. I have a very high respect for this guy Russell Arnold. So.
Just a fun fact, Russell Arnold has played one ODI or one test match. That's it. He barely has anything to his name.
No. He played a lot of ODIs.
No. Then who was the other Sri Lankan joker who used to
Ranjit Fernando.
Ranjit Fernando.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, Sanat Jayasurya, he was a very nasal commentator.
Yeah. And then you have Akhtar Ali Khan from Bangladesh. And I think in the future, we'll come back to Bangla Cricket Forum. That is, you know, every time India plays a match, every time Bangladesh loses a match, you should go to Bangla Cricket Forum.
We should probably read out comments one day just from Bangla Cricket Forum.
Yeah, yeah. And so commentary right now is, I mean, I don't know. So I know that I don't think both of you are big fans of Akash Chopra, right?
Definitely not.
Yeah, but then, So this is the level right now that I think Akash Chopra makes fair points. You know, compared to you have LS, Arun Lal, I don't know who else, Russell Arnold.
Sunny Gavaskar, you have forgotten about him.
Yeah, yeah. So this guy, Akash Chopra, is a level-headed guy. I mean, that is the standard I am setting myself.
But why does he give a middle name to every single cricketer, damn cricketer out there? Is like Cheteshwar, consistent Pujara, and those kind of crappy middle names.
Like Navjot Singh Sidhu has this theme or fashion of going into some extremely voluminous description of something very simple.
Does Sidhu comment it now?
Sidhu sits and laughs in a TV show right now. That's all he does.
He was asked to leave now because okay. He made some unpleasant and uncalled for comment.
Yeah, okay. Not to be unfair, I should tell that you have ridiculous commentators in Australia and England as well. You know?
But they have regressed over the years. I think Australia and England used to have really good commentary sites. Like Sky Sports was really good. Channel 9 was a benchmark for commentary. Richie Beno, Tony Gregg, as Rahul just mentioned.
Yeah, but right now, when I looked at the India-Australia series, I think Australian commentary set a new low. I mean, it was not entertaining.
But it's not Channel 9 anymore, right? They moved on to Fox Sports, which is really regressed. But Mayuk, you know, that brings me to the point that cricket commentary is basically full of ex-cricketers right now, which is different to what it was in the past. Like you had Mark Nicholas, who was an ex-cricketer, but he was a channel host. And then you had guys like Harsha Bhogle, and every channel would have somebody like this, like a mix of ex-cricketers and just pure journalists, for instance. BBC had a lot of these. And the most iconic moments, if you think of commentary, lingers in your mind, if you can push your mind back to my memory of the World Cup semi-final in 1999 is Bill Lorry going bonkers in that game, like at the end of it.
And that's what we have on our introductory music, right?
Music today, yeah. And then you cast your mind back to Eden Gardens 2001, you have Tony Gregg, and the most unforgettable of them all is the Sharjah game. Like, that Deadhurst Tom innings would not be half as good if Tony Gregg wasn't commentating at that very stage, right? Like half of its allure is just the fact that Tony Gregg is going, like the little man has hit the big fellow for a six.
And nowadays, you know, in the recent past when India have won great matches, I seriously feel, you know, Ravi Shastri should not have commented. I mean, either it is either cold or Ravi Shastri goes insane.
Do you remember the Natwest final and the end? Ravi Shastri on air. Zaheer Scampers for a second. And that's his tone every other game. Like Zaheer Scampers for a second.
Same for the 2011 World Cup final.
World Cup. India have won. This is his tone. Like it ends with climaxes with all of this. But at least you remember him. Like if LS had done that moment, you wouldn't even remember his voice, because LS has nothing going for him. Neither the language nor the tone. It's irritating at multiple levels. I wouldn't go there. But there is memorable commentary which can make the moment really memorable, and then you have really crappy ones. Like, can you remember one line that Arun Lal spoke in 20 years of cricket watching? All you remember is the fact that he talked about crows and fishes and pigs on his live broadcast.
I mean, absolutely not. I mean, I have zero recollection of what Arun Lal has said.
And a special mention to Mohinder Amarnath, who used to do commentary in the 1990s, India South Africa series. Like, what a catch, Jonty Rhodes. I think that's my memory of Mohinder Amarnath. He would just use keywords. Mohinder Amarnath sentences would never forget. It's like a catch, and then Jonty Rhodes, South Africa. This is his commentary, okay?
Oh my God! Yeah, it's good that you reminded us of that.
And then Maninder Singh. Yeah. Go on and on about. So before we finish, do you have two moments of commentary which stuck to your mind, like two iconic moments which the commentary plays as big a role as the game itself?
Unfortunately, I've not been a huge fan of commentaries. I don't have anything to add here.
There have been several. I mean, I'm just trying to think, but one of the things that I remember from the recent past, I mean, it has been 10 years. In his debut series, the spell Ishan Sharma bowled to Ricky Ponting. I think that spell...
Harsha Bhogle?
Yeah, I think there was Bhogle and some other fellow.
Ian Chappell on air.
Yeah, that was... I mean, I remember that. I mean, Ian Chappell was really good at... I mean, so was Bhogle, yes.
You have anecdotal commentators and then you have the ones who just do... They just call stuff on TV. Like, I do not want to listen to it's gone through mid-off for four. Yeah, and
I think ESPN commentary online is better than what you hear on television.
On television. So, for me, the iconic two moments would be one of the recent past was Ian Bishop's Carlos Brathwaite, remember the name, I think, of the World Cup final, World T20 final. I think that was quite good. And then Bill Laurie's 99 semi-final. I think that was exceptional.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Good, and if you want to catch up on that, the listeners should probably tune into the podcast and listen to the opening track, because that's where the Bill Laurie track is playing. But thanks a lot for joining us today. Fantastic contributions, Mayuk and Adi, and as usual, pleasure talking to you guys. Let's catch up again for our third podcast, which will follow soon. So thanks a lot and have a fantastic day ahead.
Yes,
have a great week.
We'll look forward to bringing great topics out once again.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Germany looking good for the final on Sunday. They might get another one here. It's 3-0. It's a romp for the Germans. The game.
There is. The guy, this is my choice.